You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to this broadcast as a podcast, that is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com, and please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of A Cycle of Lectures by Rudolf Steiner, volume 316 of the collected works, entitled Understanding Healing, Meditative Reflections on Deepening Medicine Through Spiritual Science. Lecture 6, given in Dornach on the 7th of January, 1924. My dear friends, for reasons I do not want to discuss right now, I will hold the more esoterically oriented session I intended for today at the end of the course. Today I want to talk to you about something else. If we recall what we said yesterday, we might be a bit surprised that we should see thought forms behind the appearance of what is solid and earthy, that we should see courage behind the aeriform if we want to get close to the realities. Now, it is also of what I would like to call a certain medical and historical importance that we pay attention in the right way to how thoughts should be combined with what is solid and earthy, what is contoured in our perception. Because that is also how we directly realize something else. Namely, that the thought should not be combined with what is fluid, with the fluid and other circulation in the human organism. That we should not see thoughts as the force behind it or behind the aeriform and warmth-like. We have seen how we should think of the aeriform and warmth-like in the cosmos. But everything is present in turn in human beings in a special form. In human beings, this form is such that only those things which have contours, which, even if they are what we might roughly or superficially call soft, still have the character of something solid through their contoured nature, can enter thoughts. And that we must be clear that behind the fluid of which we spoke, we have to see something connected with sentience, if we want to understand the spiritual behind the ordinary physical plane. Thus, what is related to sentience in the human organism must be seen separately, because ordinarily the subjective sensations which human beings have through their soul and physical constitution are at work when we talk about sentience. But in human beings, sentience is not just what we directly experience. In human beings, sentience has an anabolic effect. And because the fluid body is a form, as a form of a general cosmic fluidity, by its nature already contains what is connected with sentience, we must be clear that what is at work in the fluid body, these etheric impulses, must also be understood with our powers of insight. But we cannot understand it with our cognition in the way we understand things which are outside the human organism, because in the human organism everything which we encounter as substances or processes changes in relation to the human being's environment. And thus we have to understand that at the point where the fluid organism starts, where we are dealing with a part of the human organization which is in fluid circulation, even if vascular organs or other things form part of the structure of such circulation, all cognitive forces which apply to what is outside the human being in the physical world are no longer of use for understanding these matters. That is why, you see, it has come about that medicine has lost sight of the fluid human being as the last component of the human organization. It would be true to say that until the mid-1840s, medicine at least still had some idea of the fluid human being. There was reference to the humors, to the fluid circulation, to mixing and separation of fluids. Not only was there cellular physiology and pathology at the time, but there was a real understanding of the mixing and separation of fluids. Of course, it was all traditional knowledge in the 19th century. But this tradition went back to a period lying before the 16th and 15th centuries, in which there was not just such a tradition, but real knowledge, knowledge of the type we need to strive for, recover again in anthroposophy today through imagination. That previous time had an imaginative character, but they were instinctive imaginations, and it was known that the human organism could not simply be understood through mere sensory perception and reflection. Thoughts and sensory perceptions only take us to the firmly contoured parts of the organism. Everything that involves the fluid circulation in the fluid human being must be understood through imagination. It is therefore no great surprise that this perception of the fluid human being has been lost, because the old instinctive imagination has been lost. Such perception will only return when imaginations are achieved in full consciousness. Let us try to bring together what we have spoken about and what is in prospect for cognition. You see, as the skeleton is built up out of the totality of the human organism, as human beings crystallize into the skeleton, that is not a good way of putting it, but you will understand what I mean, cosmic thoughts are at work on them. And the strictly contoured organs are only strictly contoured because they are subject to the same forces. We will learn about their real forces directly, to which the development of the bones is subject. So we can say that only the bone structure has thought quality in a physical sense, and the other organs with solid contours grow out of the etheric in a way that has thought quality. But because they have solid contours, they are thought structures, and what you have in physiology and pathology today, in terms of the form of the human organism, is a principle that has thought quality. But that is only one component of the human organism, and it must drop out of the human organization if we do not rise to the imaginative level. Imagination then leads us up to the fluid human being, and the way that the muscles are formed out of fluid, and the human being shoots into the muscle. This curious assemblage of the apparently firm muscle, which only appears solid, and the blood, at that point we already move from the bone-like to the blood, where we have to use the imagination to understand the human being. And there's a picture. So we can say that the thought, which is naturally supported by sensory perception, only reaches as far as the skeletal system, and anything else we say about the human being through thinking other than about the skeletal system is nonsense. We have to rise from the thinking to imagination. And when we rise to the imagination, we come to the fluid human being and how the fluid human being really shoots into the muscular system. We can only understand the nature of muscles through imagination. Why? Well, you see, if you use thoughts, you also have to apply the laws which are subject to the thinking, that is, mechanical laws. You have to use statics and dynamics. But you can only do that with the skeletal system. But try using statics and dynamics with the muscular system. Try to calculate on the basis of statics why you are able to crack a cherry stone with your teeth, or indeed a peach stone. Try to calculate that. Try setting up an experiment to measure how much weight pressure is required for that, simply by placing a weight on a cherry stone, to crack such a cherry stone. You can bite it in two, perhaps not all of us, but there are people who can bite a peach stone in two. Calculate whether, according to mechanical laws, a muscle can manage to bite a cherry stone in two. With the material provided by thoughts, you will never get close to the muscular system. You cannot do that. Mechanics become a nonsense as soon as we are dealing with muscles, and we must be able to make the transition to a kind of knowledge which can leave the mechanical laws to one side, that is, which has an understanding of the muscles through imagination, where ordinary gravity does not come in. Because as soon as you are dealing with fluids, you are dealing with buoyancy, and you do the things you do with your etheric body, not through weight, but through those things which largely overcome weight. So on that basis alone, you will understand that as soon as we approach the muscular system, we have to use a quite different cognitive method. That is, imagination. So that we can say, only in a representative way, there are transitional stages in every instance, that the muscular system is understood with imagination. And no one will understand the muscular system who fails to see it, in a sense, as an image which has not arisen in the same way as the skeletal system, but which has formed, in a sense, through the coagulation of the blood. This is, of course, as much an inept expression as when I say crystallized into the skeletal system, but it is comparatively correct. So just think, when you have a bone, say the ulna or radius or the upper arm, and you apply the lever rule to it. Well, the bones are quite happy to have that done to them. But consider, while you can understand quite well what happens with the radius or the upper arm through leverage and other mechanical laws, whether you can also understand what is happening in any given muscle. There, the images have to take on a soft structure, have to be transformed. That is precisely the nature of an imagination, that it can yield everywhere, and that it comprises those things which acquire their substance through metamorphosis. The muscle possesses that. The muscle lives in its metamorphosis. Bones patiently subject themselves to the laws of mechanics. The muscles do not. They are just as flexible as the metamorphosing images, images, not thoughts, which we have in the imagination to follow them in our inner flexibility. So you see, with a solid earthy human being, we are in the skeletal system. With the muscular system, we are in the fluid human being. If we now rise from imagination to inspiration, we get to the aeriform human being, those things in the human being which are aeriform. And in coming close to inspiration, we are getting to a way of comprehension that is very similar to hearing musical tones, harmonies, melodies, very similar to musical listening. Inspiration no longer has anything to do with anything conceptual, but with something which is musical even in the way we perceive it. Something musical does not always need to be heard. It can also be sensed if it is spiritual. And all inspiration fundamentally has something musical. Now we have the peculiar thing here that the form of the human internal organs, those organs which take care of the development of our organization throughout life, in respiration, nutrition, and so on, that is, the organs underlying all those things, those organic forms cannot be explained by any mechanical laws. But they cannot be explained imaginatively either. It is simply absurd, nonsense, if we wanted to explain the form of the lungs or the liver simply in terms of their structure, how the cells are organized, or by weight. Just take a look and see whether anyone has succeeded yet in explaining the form of the lung or liver as form. No one has managed to do that. Because these organs, which take care of developing life during our time on earth, exist at a very early primordial stage, even if in a very strongly metamorphosed form. They all have their origin in the formative, aeriform forces. Today's scientifically inclined person says that air is made up of oxygen, nitrogen, a number of other things, and it is a more or less regular substance, which is only differentiated through inner mechanical movement, which manifests itself in the form of wind. But the kind of air that the physicist describes today does not exist. There is only the concrete air that surrounds our earth. But, my dear friends, the air that surrounds our earth is permeated everywhere with formative forces. We inhale these formative forces with the physical substance of the air. Once our organs are complete, when we have a finished lung, then it happens that the formative forces which we inhale with the substance of the air coincide as it were, with the form of the lung, so that they no longer have any great importance once we are born, except for growth. But during the embryonic period, during the physical separation from the external air, that is when the formative forces of the air are at work initially through the maternal body. They build up the lung like all human organs are built up from them, with the exception of the muscles and the bones. All the internal organs which preserve developing life are built up from the formative forces of the air. What happens there can be compared, albeit in a crude comparison, with the creation of Chladni figures. These are plates which are lightly covered in fine particles and attached to a single point. They are bowed with a violin bow in a particular way, creating specific forms depending on how they are bowed. The figures are created out of the formative forces which are called up in the air. In the same way, the internal organs of the human being are formed out of the general formative forces of the air. The lung is indeed formed from the respiratory forces, but the other organs also. The only difference is that the other organs are formed more or less indirectly, whereas the lung is formed directly. But the way in which the human organs are formed out of the formative oscillations of the air can only be understood through inspiration. What forms out of the air is similar to music in the way it is perceived, just as the sound patterns also have a musical foundation. There is so much in physiology today that is fundamentally wrong that one is sometimes embarrassed to say the right thing when it is so grotesquely different from what people say. When human beings hear, all their organs vibrate along with the vibration of the air, not just the inner hearing organs. The whole human being vibrates along, if only quietly. And therefore the ear is not an organ of hearing because it vibrates, but because it brings what is present in the rest of the organism to consciousness in the way it is inwardly organized. It is a big but subtle difference if we say human beings hear through their ears or human beings use their ears to bring to consciousness what they hear. Because human beings are built up out of sound, even if that does not mean the sounds we hear. So that we have to say that inspiration grasps the human internal organs. See plate 6. The organization of the human internal organs, the aeriform human being, must be understood through inspiration. You see, it is no real surprise that a real understanding of the human organs was lost, even in ancient times, because inspiration was lost, and because inspiration is the only way to understand the internal organs. Otherwise, all we can do is look at their shape in a corpse, but we will not understand them. So you can see that really the whole human organism exists in the background of the physical world. When we talk in the way I have done in my book titled Knowledge of the Higher Worlds, How Is It Achieved?, people always imagine that here we have the physical world, and behind it we have the spiritual world in stages. We get into the closest spiritual world through imagination, into the one after that through inspiration, and into a further one through intuition. But people simply do not think that all of the things which make up the human being, of all the things which make up the human being, only the skeletal system is built up by the elemental spirits, while the muscular system is built up by the spiritual beings of a higher hierarchy. That has to be recognized now. We must be able to go to these beings through imagination if we want to understand the muscular system. Equally, we have to go to even higher spiritual beings through inspiration if we want to understand the internal organs. By putting your skeleton upright, you only look as if you were adapted to the shapes, but in its inner development, the skeleton can only be investigated by means of inspiration. You have to see what I want to say in the following way. Today's researchers think about or study a plant, by analyzing what they can see, the substance presented to them, using the methods commonly applied today. But that is not the plant. The plant is structured in the way that I explained yesterday. It is built out of the cosmos, and only the root has a physical construction. The whole form of the plant is spiritual reality, supersensory reality. But the supersensory has been filled with matter. And anyone who simply investigates this physical matter in the plant is like a person who has a text before him where the ink is still wet, covers it with blotting sand, and then thinks that the blotting sand represents the essence of the text. When they study a plant today, people are acting like someone who has a text before him and covers it with blotting sand because the ink is still wet. Then he scrapes off the sand and says, "I will study the sand to see what is written in the text." That broadly is how people attempt to explain a plant, whereas in reality it is a spiritual being which is only filled within its space with physical substance. In the same way the human organ systems are only filled with physical substance. In reality, only the skeletal system is physical, the muscular system is etheric, and the organ system is astral. And if we rise to true intuition, we reach the warmth human being, the organization which is a space filled with inwardly differentiated warmth. Now I said that we truly experience ourselves in warmth, that we do not experience it like carbon or nitrogen, but warmth just is. It is inside us, and we are in it when we experience it. It is precisely the thing which we experience most intensively. That is why people today cannot deny that they experience warmth, whereas they have no idea that they experience air, water, and earth. They have no idea because they have grown out of that. But the experience of warmth is that the direct application of intuition to the human organism. We simply have to experience warmth not in a wholesale way, as we do in ordinary life, but in the way it is finely differentiated in the forms of the organs themselves. If we are able to observe the warmth organism throughout the organism by means of intuition, this cognitive method will lead us to an understanding not of the internal organs, but of the activity of the internal organs. All the activity of the internal organs must be grasped through an understanding of the way that the warmth ether is organized. Anything else is not really suitable for achieving an understanding of the activity of the organs. A perception, an intuitive perception of the activity of the warmth ether, that is, of the warmth human being, that is what must be understood through intuition. In other words, it is not sufficient simply to think that here we have the physical world, and then we acquire imagination, inspiration, and intuition to enter other worlds. The other worlds are here. The etheric world is here, in that human beings have a muscular system. The astral world is here, in that human beings have a system of organs. And the world of Devakan, the spiritual world, is here, in that we have the warmth human being. The spiritual is constantly among us. It is here. After all, the human being is a spirit, but this spirit is filled with physical substance. That is why we abandon ourselves to the illusion that human beings are only physical beings. Human beings are even spirit as such, reaching up through the warmth organization into the highest world that can be reached. That is why it is so amusing to see 8 or 10 spiritualists sitting around a table, calling on spirits which are much, much lower than the 8 or 10 people who are sitting around the table, and do not know that they too are spirit. That, my dear friends, is something of which we must be deeply aware. Then we can begin to move to a higher level. You see, once we have grasped, through intuition, the activity, this wonderful activity within the whole human organization, then one from one organ to the next, all the things that take place in the warmth ether, we find that there are two types of warmth. The warmth ether is a very special element. If there is any process which produces a change in the warmth ether, there was always a reaction. By their nature, warmth currents always flow counter to one another, action and reaction. The warmth ether is differentiated within itself. There is always a cruder etheric substance, which is opposed by a finer etheric substance. But only that makes it possible for phenomena to appear, which we can illustrate in the first instance with a crude image. Imagine that you were in a heated room, which is nice and warm. It is pleasant. You heat it up to such an extent that you can no longer stand it. That is not just a physical state. It is also a mental state. The one warmth, the finer warmth, is experienced particularly by the soul. We always experience warmth in two ways, the warmth we experience in the soul and the warmth in which we live, which is outside our soul. The warmth which is in our warmth organism and the warmth which is outside. We can say that there is a physical warmth and mental warmth. But if we take the internal organs, the aeriform human being which is comprehended through inspiration, we have the airy element in its main form to begin with. But this airy form has light working within it, in a different way from the way that the finer warmth is at work in warmth itself. So we can say that for intuition, warmth becomes comprehensible in warmth. Warmth remains warmth in that it is differentiated within its own element. But that is not the case with air. The real air is not the fantastical air of the physicists, which surrounds our earth like a skin. That does not exist. The real air cannot be thought without a light state. And darkness is also a light state, so that air and light represent an associated differentiation. Light is an organizing component in the whole air organism. Now we progress even further into the soul entity. There is not just external light, but also metamorphosed inner light, which penetrates the whole human being, which lives in him or her. Light lives in human beings through the air. And equally, the chemical metabolism lives in you through water, through the fluid element. That is where the chemical forces reside. Water, imagined as physical water, that is, the water of the physicists, is fantasy. At the moment that water appears anywhere in an organizing capacity, it always appears with the chemical metabolism. Imagining the fluid element in human beings without the chemical metabolism is like imagining a human organism without the head. We can even draw it, eliminate everything of a soul nature, but it is no longer a reality. Your body can no longer live if you cut the head off. It no longer remains an organism. Equally, the fluid element in the human being is not what physicists describe fantastically as water. But just as the human organism forms an integrated whole with the head, so the chemical metabolism is tied to the fluid everywhere. And the solid or earthy part of the human organism is only present in the nascent state, just as water is only present in the latter state in human beings. It is transformed immediately. The earthy element is only present in human beings when it is tied simultaneously to life. See Plate 7. Little chart. Earth, life. Water, chemical metabolism. Air, light. Warmth, in warmth. Physical body, etheric body. And now you see, if you draw a vertical line here, you have the physical body here and the associated etheric body here. But they are a single whole, are only two sides of the same coin, we might say. You have the etheric states of warmth, light, the chemical metabolism, and life, and the physical states of warmth, air, water, and earth. Well, if we were to describe the etheric states in abstract, we would first look at the warmth ether as the lowest ether in the context of fluidity, solidity, and so on. The next highest ether would be the life ether. But when we describe the human being, we have to proceed in such a way that intuition gets to know the warmth human being, the inner activity of the organs. In climbing down to the most crude level, from the warmth to the earthy element, we climb up in the etheric body from warmth to life. What does that mean? Just consider, human beings actually reverse the human qualities. They only apply the warmth ether to the warmth organization, the light ether to the air organism, the chemical ether to the fluid organization, the life ether to the solid organization. If you really understand something like that, you cannot think as people normally think. If you want to stop and only think like people normally think, you can really only understand the skeletal human being, the earth human being. You need to progress from normal thinking to such an understanding of the world which truly, inwardly, takes hold of you, as I said before. And so you see, my dear friends, that is why in the end there is something special about medical knowledge. In the ancient mysteries where certain insights existed regarding the treatment of human beings, medical knowledge was an astounding part of the mysteries. The physicians were trained in the mysteries and were not just physicians, but also wise people who took care of the religious cults. In that context, it was relatively natural that the physician kept his knowledge, as indeed all mystery knowledge, secret in a certain sense. Because, you see, if we want to know something, we have to clothe that knowledge in thoughts. Otherwise, we would drift in indeterminacy. The pictorial knowledge in imagination, the knowledge which is spiritually heard and intuitively seen, must be clothed in thoughts. Now, people say about these thoughts, like about the thoughts of modern anthroposophy, that they are not expressed very well. It was clear to people that medical knowledge had to be transformed into thoughts. By transforming medical knowledge into thoughts, something of its effectiveness is removed if it is therapeutic knowledge. I am touching on something here which is connected with very profound things. It cannot be denied that knowledge about medicines removes the strength of those medicines in a certain sense. And it is necessary for a physician who wishes to be taken seriously to forego in his own case, to a greater or lesser extent, the efficacy of the medicines which he uses for his patients, and to observe different ways of healing for himself. Please consider what this sentence implies, and you will realize that in a much deeper sense than what has been said hitherto, the physician must develop a personal disposition of wanting to give assistance. He really, in his own case, has to forego the healing powers with regard to those things which he uses for his patients. If we crudely ascribe the efficacy of medicines to chemical forces, if we believe that medicines work like the steam in a locomotive, then we are not subject to such spiritual laws. But if we see how human beings extend into the spiritual realm, we will not doubt for a minute that spiritual laws underlie the foundations of the different medicines, specially for human beings. If it is grasped in its true essence, medicine is to the highest degree the most wonderful way to educate ourselves to be selfless. That is why, in a certain sense, it is a colossally gross misunderstanding if people keep demanding today that all therapy should be taught in the same way as mechanics or similar things. After all, mechanics can be applied to the individual human being, but also to the whole of humanity. With a physician, everything is individual, and if he or she has a real in-depth knowledge of a medicine, there is a high degree of necessity for that physician to forego using the medicine in his or her own treatment. That is the great education in selflessness. I will still speak about how physicians can nevertheless help themselves, but the things which underlie such facts should not take root in your hearts. If you take the things seriously which I have just spoken about today, then it will happen simply as a result of universal laws that altruism and not egoism will be introduced into medicine. That is already inherent in the basic attitude. And altruism, selflessness, is the basic element of medicine. Medical ethics is not just something artificial, but a consequence of heaven's very own laws. Laws which have been formed by the cosmos in order to create medicines on the basis of those laws. The more such information induces a serious mood, the more it will be able to contribute to capturing the real essence of the medicines as such. The end of Lecture 6.